Welcome to Parents' Perspective. How about grabbing coffee Tuesday afternoon? Melanie asked her friend Lois. I'm taking the kids to the dentist Tuesday morning. The dentist? Samantha's not even 4 years old yet. Does she have a toothache or something? Lois inquired. No, but I've got to take Ben anyway. It's such a chore to get him to brush that I let him chew gum that's supposed to help clean your teeth. I sure hope that's helped. Anyway, while we're there, Dr. Hunter might as well meet Samantha. I'll probably have to give her a lollipop or something to get her to sit still. Sounds like a fun visit all around, mused Lois. Glad it's just the two of us in the afternoon. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about our children's teeth and dental health? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has years of experience with kids in the dentist's chair. Dr. Robert Morgenstein is a pediatric dentist in private practice in North Bethesda, Maryland, also active in a number of pediatric dentistry professional organizations. He has both a grown son and a grown daughter and six grandchildren. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Morgenstein.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
When should children begin going to the dentist?
Well, this is an excellent question. I guess a good way to start. The current recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry is that a child should have his first dental visit by the time the first tooth erupts, certainly no later than age one.
Oh, my goodness.
I see your jaws are dropping, as well as most people. But this is something that's been promulgated for several years now. And first it had to catch on in the profession, and then now the public and the Academy of Pediatrics is accepting it, as well as the American Dental Association.
Why is this so young?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question. We found, since we've been doing it, and I was one of the naysayers, I must admit, but I am certainly a convert at this point. It's a wonderful time to see a healthy child, to see a healthy young family, to impart information, to get some interaction with the family and get your message across. It's going to help these kids for a lifetime and hopefully keep them in a preventive state all their lives. The first, obviously at the first visit, there's not a whole lot of teeth, but there are a lot of things that we'd like to talk about. We like to talk about development. We like to talk about prevention. We like to talk about feeding habits. We would like to talk about establishing diet regimes, as well as the dental preventive things that you all know about, is brushing teeth, helping children brush their teeth. And there are a lot of thoughts, and especially for new parents, they just don't know these things. I mean, as a parent, I found out myself, we're expected to have children and know everything, but we don't. So we need to go to others for advice, such as you. And there is information available, and I've been very pleased with the results of our infant screening, as we call it.
How do you get these little ones to sit still in the dentist chair and open their mouth without biting something?
They don't usually bite in. Actually, we don't do that. A lot of it is interview. A lot of it is done by our trained preventive counselors, and the examination actually takes place in what we call a knee-to-knee position, where I will sit with my knees across from the parent and the child is in between us, so that the child has the comfort of their parent, and yet I'm able to do the examination that I need to do at the same time.
Very different from your other patients who don't sit on anybody's lap.
This is true. This is true.
What's the difference between going to the family dentist and a child-oriented practice?
Well, the difference is in training, perhaps, and in what you do all the time. I used to say it was kind of like taking your child to a children's shoe store or a regular shoe store, or I guess the best analogy is a pediatrician versus a family practitioner. Pediatric dentists are trained to work with children. They're trained to work not only with the dental needs of children, but they know about the growth and development. They know how a child should behave at a certain age and how to be able to interact with them. And they're able to offer them these things. I think a key to working with children is to get them in a situation where they're going to be comfortable and where it's going to be meaningful to them, not only for that visit, but for the future as well. So I think there are advantages for a child. For older children, there's less. And many older children end up going to their parents' dentist and do just fine. But there is more information available, and experience. And people that do what I do have had at least 2, usually 3 years of postgraduate training following dental school just to work with children.
Now, does that include also working with kids with special needs?
Yes. Special needs, children and adults, has been an area that has fallen to pediatric dentistry by default. Because there's really nobody that wants to do it. And many pediatric dental programs are based in hospitals, so that normally you have more access and disabled or other able children will come to hospital settings for treatment. So you get the experience there. And you also have the facility, should you need them, if a child needs to be asleep for their treatment, for that to happen. There are more training programs for adults, but unfortunately, this is an area where we really don't serve our total population very well yet.
So does that mean that you would also see adults with special needs or no?
I do. Okay. I do. Most pediatric dentists, and it depends what they're comfortable with, will see adults as well. And with the changes in care for adults and the deinstitutionalization of special needs patients, they're out in the community. They're in group homes or their homes, and so they're part of the community, and they need to have places where they can be comfortable as well.
How should we prepare our kids, no matter what their needs, for their appointment with the dentist?
Well, obviously it should be positive. And what I always tell parents is you give parent advice. I'll give the dental advice. You give the advice that you know. You're going to a dentist. You're going to sit in a big chair. The dentist will talk to you. And that's really all you know that's going to happen. So leave it at that. Let the dentist and his staff do the rest. They're prepared to welcome the child, to make him comfortable. And by not giving them more information than they need, prevent conflicts. The dentist doesn't want to make the parent into something that they're not, and vice versa. We don't want our hands tied.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on children's dental health.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Robert Morgenstein about children's dental hygiene.
We had one child who was a thumb sucker, my middle son, and when he was old enough to get the point, I said, you know, you're going to have to be going to the dentist at that point. We thought 3 was quite young to be taking them to the dentist, and that's what we did. And I said, you're going to be going to the dentist, and I don't think they're going to be real happy about your sucking your thumb. It's really not very good for your teeth. So he said with a straight face, if you need to take away my noing-noing blanket, I'll stop sucking my thumb. So we took the noing-noing blanket and we put it in a drawer to see what would happen. And pretty much within 2 or 3 days, when we would walk in and he was asleep, he wasn't sucking his thumb anymore. Now, with that, I want to ask you, thumb sucking and other kinds of things that can be harmful to their teeth, what are they?
Oh, boy. How long do we have? I think you hit on a key thing when you took the blanket away from the child in terms of thumb sucking. And I'll back up and tell you, there are some habits that can be deleterious to dental development. But again, you need to look at this child and see what's going on in their life. And if the most important thing in their life is to stop the habit, then you've got a challenge. But I think in terms of breaking some of these habits, it has to come from the child. We can facilitate, we can help, we can even bribe, but we can't do it without their help. And I think that your example of the blanket is just wonderful, and it's one of the things that we use all the time. In fact, I'll tell you, one of the things I always say to kids that have a blanket or curl their hair, you know, I have to break that cycle in one place, and I will often tell the child, well, let's send this blanket to the cleaners and have it come back and put in a box, and you're going to put it away for your child. And I had a parent come in several years ago and said, well, I tried that, and you're in big trouble, Dr. Morgenstein. I said, why? She said, well, my child decided they needed to get rid of the blanket, but they didn't want to save it for their child, and they wanted to have a party. So we set up a party on the backyard, and when the garbage man came, they invited the garbage man to come to the party and gave him the blanket. So I don't know who was besting who, but it was one way to solve that problem.
Oh, that's so cute. Well, what other kinds of things can be harmful to their teeth? For example, some of them use their teeth to try to open soda bottles.
For sure. I think that I got to back off to my main message in talking about that. The main thing that is harmful to their teeth is not taking care of them, obviously.
Okay.
And in terms of that, the other developmental issues that come into place are prolonged use of pacifiers, bottles, fingers or thumbs, occasionally habits. I mean, other objects, but not often. And then the other big thing is trauma.
What's prolonged mean before we get to trauma?
Well, I will tell you, as a part of my training, I had this wonderful old visiting professor from London Lying In Hospital, and she was just a wonderful old country doctor. And she would lecture. She was a physician, but she would lecture on holistic care for children. And she started one lecture by saying, can you tell me what animal suckles their young after they have teeth? And everybody looked around. She said, none. You know, animals were made to be weaned when they first got their teeth, which is a roundabout way of saying that usually by a year, we really like bottle and breastfeeding to have ceased. For developmental reasons, number one. Number two, for the potential problems prolonged feeding can have, as I said, with development, but also with the thing that you probably have all heard about, which is called early childhood caries, which is decay in children under 2 years of age, which can be devastating.
Now, how does that come about? We've all heard the stories of going to bed with the bottle in the crib.
That's exactly how it comes out. And that's exactly how it comes about. And it's a very simple story. Decay is primarily caused by bacteria and acid. And bacteria like to eat as well. And you put them in a nice warm place, and you put a nipple right in front of them, and they have a wonderful time. So as soon as the child falls asleep, whatever liquid, and unfortunately it's not always milk. I have had kids come in with Coca-Cola in their bottles or fruit juice and things like that. They're all fermentable, so they're all capable of causing decay. It's just a perfect culture medium for the bacteria. And in a susceptible child, in 2 months, it can be devastating.
Can you get it any other way, like on a pacifier or anything like that?
Not as far as we know. However, there was recently, about a year ago, the first study of this came out, and they did find that the DNA from these bacteria in the mother were found in the child. So in a susceptible child, if it's the right bacterial mix, it can be there. And I guess the example of that is, you remember when you feed your children, you say, here's one for you, and here's one for mommy, and that's how the bacteria gets transmitted. And that's one of the ways that it gets transmitted.
Now, prolonged use of a pacifier or a thumb or two fingers, as Sandy's mm-hmm. son did. What's prolonged in that case?
Well, I got to beg off on that one. it's, again, what I will often tell parents, if it's not a problem to me, then I don't really care. I mm-hmm. do care, but I'm not going to get involved. But if mm-hmm. I see some distortion, if I see speech difficulties, if I see that the tongue is not being used properly, if it's pressing on the teeth or not balancing with the lips, these are reasons that I would get involved. But from a dental standpoint, if a child has a thumb or a pacifier and the teeth and the jaws are in proper alignment and the speech is good, it's not a problem.
Are there good health habits that we need to try to encourage?
Oh, there are good health habits. There are good health habits. And one of them, from the preventive standpoint, is parental involvement in helping the children. And I think once a day, a grown-up, as I call it, needs to be involved in helping a child brush their teeth. And I shouldn't call it brush their teeth, but in actually removing the bacteria from the surfaces of their teeth. And I get into a lot of trouble because I don't think that this is really something that children are capable of effectively doing.
Now, although this is children up to what age?
Well, that's what I was waiting for you to ask. My feeling is it takes fine motor skill at the level of script writing.
Which is like 7 or 8?
Which is second or third, usually third grade. Yeah, and by that time you can ask a child to really effectively brush their teeth. However, with the advent of electric toothbrushes and the popularity, this has really improved things. I'm a very big advocate of mechanical brushes for kids.
Does somebody in your office give them instructions, brush for 2 minutes, or?
With new patients, we do. We actually sit down and have a formal session, but as a part of every visit, which I like other pediatric dentists and like all dentists, we function on the theory of prevention. We reinforce it every visit, and we'll point out to a child, geez, you're really doing well here, but look at this. This needs to be a little bit better, and Mom, you need to help a little bit more with this. That's really important. And the other aspect of that is diet. And this is a tremendously difficult area, I think, to talk about. The American diet is replete with sugar. And that's just the way it is, and probably most of the world is as well. And we know that sugar is the causative effect for a certain kind of cavities. And we talk about trying to eliminate that, if possible, from their diet, which is very difficult to do because it's in everything. So we talk about trying to limit the attacks, the number of times the teeth are exposed to sugar, but more so we're now talking about the stickiness factors of foods. To eat foods
like
that are
raisins
not sticky.
And things like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Raisins stuff that we wouldn't have thought of.
And dried fruits, and probably the worst, and I don't know if this is a sponsored show, but fruit roll-ups, disastrous. It's just gluing the sugar to the teeth and then the bacteria attaching to that as well. Mm-hmm. So the stickiness factor is there. And it's limiting. I mean, it's not a really exciting diet if you're living a dental or a good, healthy diet for kids because they don't advertise carrots on... on the cartoon shows and the other things that we would like kids to be eating.
Yeah. We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on children's dental health.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Robert Morgenstein about children's dental hygiene.
Now, what about the kid who takes his lunch to school? And what can the kid have to be sure that maybe he can't take a toothbrush, obviously, with him, unless he wanted to be the laughingstock of his class.
This is a problem. Well, I will tell you a story about that came out recently. My kids are grown, and we were very careful about what they took to school at lunch. So there was a lot of fruit, obviously, and whole grain sandwiches with things that we had. We found out years later my son was a great trader.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Right.
Yeah,
my kids used to say,
what
is this worth on the open market?
Right. Yeah. So you just have to accept a certain part of that. But when I look at diet and food for kids, it's not only dental. I look at other things that have an overall impact on a child's health. So I'm aware of sugar. I'm aware of fats. And especially for little boys where all of the work in cholesterol is being done. When I talk about diet, I don't think it should be limited to dental healthy diet. I think an overall healthy diet is something that we should shoot for, and that's part of dentistry's responsibility is to get that message out as well.
Do we teach kids, or do you in your office teach kids to floss young, or parents to floss their kids' teeth?
We do. And again, it's a very simple concept behind it. The dental floss, and I know everybody sitting at home is going to look in their 3-year-old mouth and say, gosh, there are these tremendous spaces there. Why do I have to floss? Well, the place that you floss is the place under the gums. And the theory is that the bacteria that cause decay take 24 hours to organize on your teeth. So you have kind of a 24-hour window, and if every 24 hours you're removing them, theoretically you're not going to have trouble. But if it's if it's allowed to remain there, and none of us are perfect, so we do need to then go to the dentist and get help with that.
What are some red flags about kids' teeth that might warrant either an extra trip to the dentist or a trip at a younger age than we might have planned, although can't imagine a younger age than a kid with one tooth.
Well, let me finish the one kid and one tooth thing. Following that first visit, then usually children are not seen again until between 2.5 and 3, which is traditionally where we've been doing it. And at that time, it's a really, you know, the dentition is complete, the child is accepting of care, accepting of strangers, and that's when dental care begins. We also turn up a fair number of problems by that time. And the red flags you look for, well, if the children's teeth don't look white, there's something on there, and that something has got bacteria in it, so it shouldn't be there. If you see holes, obviously if the child is complaining or if their behavior changes. You know, a child that normally likes to eat certain things won't eat them and starts mouthing toys all of a sudden, drooling, things that they're past in their development, then you need to think about something going on.
Are there certain snacks that you suggest parents try? My mother-in-law used to accuse me of feeding my children as if they were rabbits. She used to say, oh, she feeds them like rabbits. But we figured if we stuck a lot of crisp raw vegetables in front of them, at least they'd eat those first.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. And that's what I was alluding to before. It's not exciting to kids.
Yes.
But those are the things that you want to do. Fresh fruits, vegetables, hard pretzels, things without sugar.